Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There's a word that football coaches use a lot, and I think normally when we hear things like this, it just kind of gets filed away in our mind of the typical coaches cliche. You know, there's some bad ones that have meaning, I think, in real life, but almost lose their meaning because coaches say them too much. Iron sharpens iron is an example of that. I mean, that's, I think, a maxim that is probably true. And, you know, being around other good people makes you better. I think we would all probably agree with that. But football coaches have a tendency to talk that way so much, constantly praising the notion or pushing the notion of things like, well, you know, iron sharpens iron as a way of referencing the value of competition, that it almost loses its meaning when we hear coaches speak that way. There's another word that I think is kind of like that, and that's the word culture. Coaches are always talking about culture, 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 culture. Well, I actually had the word culture on my mind this morning, and I'll tell you why, and then I'll say a few things about this here for a moment. I saw a really good tweet yesterday, and it came from a guy named Joe Person, who covers the Carolina Panthers, The Athletic. And what he was talking about was former Panthers head coach Ron Rivera, now is head coach of the Washington Redskins. And if you follow the NFL closely at all, you know that the Redskins have had their problems. This is an odd organization. They just have sort of a weird way of going about their business, and they've not been very successful. And what Joe Person says about the former Panthers coach, now Redskins coach Ron Rivera, Person tweets out that Rivera wants to establish a culture in Washington. Enter Thomas Davis. Now, many of you remember Davis as the former UGA star of the early 2000s, a big part of the SEC championship defense back in 2002. You know, David Pollack's the College Football Hall of Famer. We found that out last week, and Pollack is the all-time great on that team. But in terms of a defensive impact back then, you know, I don't know that Davis was far off necessarily, at least in that 2002 year, of having an impact similar to a Pollack. Those of you also remember what a big hitter Davis was back then. He's sort of known in the NFL now for some different things, but back then was just really known as a ferocious hitter. I mean, a big thumper all the way around, a very good player, almost like a positionless type player, a guy that was a little bit like a big safety, a little bit like a fast linebacker, a guy that could just do a little bit of everything. He was a very good player at Georgia and kind of an unusual recruiting story in that he was first discovered playing basketball, and an example that we cite from time to time of guys that rise up the ranks and become great players. Davis, a longtime NFL veteran, battled some injury, come back from that, and yet he's still playing after all these years, after not really being the kind of five-star recruit you sort of typically think of guys being. It's a really cool story for Thomas Davis. And in the NFL, as Person alludes to, he's also thought of someone that you bring in a place like Washington when you want to establish a culture. Now, there are a few takeaways, I think, that a Georgia fan probably ought to have about something like this. On a day like today, it's probably a good thing to talk about. The first one is this. We're about to find out in the world of college football just who really has a culture and who has kind of used words like that as lip service. I began a moment ago by saying certain coaches have a way of rendering every phrase meaningless by beating it to death as a cliche. We're about to find out for whom, which programs culture is a cliche and which programs it's the bedrock of what it's all about. Let's take the team we care the most about, the Georgia Bulldogs. Not able to practice right now. When will football activities resume again? As of now, we don't know. Society is completely paused because of the attempt to slow down the outbreak of the coronavirus. We all know that by now, but there will be a time in which football is played again, and which programs will have handled this the better? Well, at that point in time, much the same way Thomas Davis is credited for bringing about a culture, programs better hope they have one, and they don't have longtime NFL veterans like Davis to help instill that, but they better have some version of that to be able to bring about. We played audio yesterday of Kirby Smart talking about how he hopes his coaches are good at instilling leadership, and I said on yesterday's show that one of the measuring sticks for how good of a coach Kirby Smart is isn't so measurable. It isn't so tangible. You can look at number of guys that get drafted. You can look at overall performance on the field, but Smart says also judge me on the leaders that I create, and there's no simple statistic to judge just how good of a leader you are. But it will be, to a degree, measured in how teams perform once they're back on practice fields and playing fields again after a long layoff. And I guess it's also important to note, as we're kind of talking about culture in this regard right now, there are sort of different variations of the way this shows up on a football team. I mean, when Smart first took the Georgia job, he talked a lot about culture. But the kind of culture change that he, I think, intended to bring about then is a little different than the kind of culture necessity that we see pop up in the sport right now. Let me go back to 2017 for a moment, where, you know, Georgia was getting ready to play Vanderbilt a year after what was probably the ugliest moment of the 2016 season, losing to the Commodores in Athens, kind of an odd game plan, and a team that day that just sort of looked physically beaten down. And some people would say, well, maybe they were beaten down from the practice mentality that Smart was trying to instill. Here we are a year later, the team's performing much better, and it would go out and just absolutely, you know, throttle Vanderbilt the way that it probably should have done in 2016. And Smart was asked about that culture change that was taking place at Georgia at the time. And I think the insinuation of the question is, what does that mean for the culture that was in place before? But listen to the way that Smart kind of talks about this. First of all, he doesn't take any kind of shot at the previous regime. Obviously, that'd be head coach Mark Richt. In this particular aspect, though, the kind of culture stuff that Smart is talking about is more about really hard practices and really, really deep rosters to make those practices as competitive as possible. Let me give you an example of Smart talking about the culture of the past. Here's Kirby.
I wasn't concerned with the way it was before. I was only concerned with how I saw it being. And I thought that was important. It's nothing about before because I wasn't here. It was just more about the way I felt like good practices should be done. And from a depth standpoint, you got to have good numbers to be able to practice the way you want to practice. And we had to work to get towards that. And we're still striving to get what we need from a scout team standpoint, a rep standpoint, a physicality standpoint. We're trying to improve that every day.
So that's a version of culture. And I do think Georgia making the college football playoff in 2017 was greatly impacted by that kind of cultural enhancement. This is no shot at Mark Richt. This is no criticism of him. But the roster wasn't deep enough. There were plenty of good players, and Smart used a lot of those good players that Richt had brought in to make the playoff in 2017. But in terms of making the roster as deep as it needed to be, in terms of making practices as competitive as they could be, that was an important culture change for Georgia to have that early success in the Smart era. However, what we're talking about now is a little different than that, though. This is more the culture of, do you value intrinsic motivation? To go back to Thomas Davis for a moment, you don't get to where Davis has gotten in his NFL career, still playing after all these years. That in itself is one of the amazing accomplishments. You know, longevity is typically a thing that we credit basketball players with, baseball players with, sports that are just a little less physical all the way around. We typically credit those players for finding a way to have long careers. Football is just, what was the famous phrase? I always forget. Was it Sam Weiss who made this popular? That NFL stands for not for long. Maybe it was Jerry Glanville who said that. Either way, it was a coach from that era. NFL stands for not for long. Thomas Davis has kind of confounded that expectation by lasting as long as he has, having left Georgia after the 2002 season. I mean, he's kind of proven that you can last a long time in the NFL if you are intrinsically motivated to go out and stay in as good a physical condition as you can, to get your mind right every single day, to approach every single day, every single week, every single month, every single year, trying to be the best that you possibly can be. You can achieve great things. And now for college football players who, admittedly, when you're younger and less mature, this is a difficult thing to find. But you've got to find a way right now to reach down and grab some of that same internal motivation, pushing yourself to be as good as you can be, because the accountability that you're used to having on a college campus with the strength and conditioning coach screaming in your face, or your own, you know, position coach, you know, plotting you along, pushing you along, we don't have that for a lot of these players right now. They're going to have to work to get better right now without all of that. And that kind of culture stuff really matters. And hopefully the programs like Georgia have been doing a good job instilling that kind of attitude along the way so that it shows some fruit once games and practices begin a little bit later on this summer. Let me also say a couple other things real quick. That I think the other thing about Davis and the way that he's kind of lauded right now, it kind of reminds you of another NFL story that's coming to an end. That is that Ben Watson is announcing that his career is coming to an end. Obviously, a former Georgia guy that a lot of UGA fans have great affection for. Watson's very outspoken on social media and almost always has poignant, honest, real, genuine things to say. And it's an example of, I think one of the culture things that Richt clearly got right was identifying good players in the program, working to cultivate those relationships, to make those even better men as they left Georgia. And I said this on the video version of Dog Nation Daily today. You know, I'm a Georgia fan. I got a Georgia sweatshirt on right now. I would have cheered for Georgia almost no matter what, no matter, you know, what kind of players they had. But when it is a guy like Davis or a guy like Watson who's ending his NFL career now after I think he was going to end it a year ago and decided to come back for one final season, when it's guys like this who have represented the Georgia G and gone on to be such classy guys in their post-college football career, I think it makes being a Georgia football fan that much more fun. Kirby Smart's done a good job of instilling that kind of stuff in the players that he's recruited, and Mark Richt was very good at that for his 15 years as well. Georgia has a pretty long list of distinguished former players, distinguished alumni, and that is a very nice characteristic for a football program to have. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. And I know it's a little bit weird. The video show is not the way that we've kind of come to expect it because I am doing it from home right now. We're trying to honor the social distance here for now. So we appreciate you being a little bit patient with us, a little bit different kind of thing, whether it be radio at noon, of course, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcast form. We're on Spotify now. It's a good time to be there for that. Apple, Google, everything else. We just really appreciate you being with us as a part of the program here today. I also want to give a quick shout out to my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. You know, for a lot of people, this unusual time we're experiencing in our society also comes at a horrible time because they find themselves dealing with a relationship that's severed. And if that's your situation, I can't tell you enough how much my prayers are with you. I know that leaning on your support system, your family, your spouse, whomever, that's a really important time for now. And if you find that relationship in your own life being severed, I apologize. I will say that there is a better horizon for you. And if that next step includes the divorce process, it's really important to have an advocate on your side. So check out my friends at Meriwether and Tharp on that. They're your source for Georgia divorce. You can find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com, and they can give you the resources you need to make the best decision about the next step for you. And they, a lot of these resources, by the way, are free podcasts, free blog posts, things like that. You can check them out online, theatlantadivorceteam.com. My friends at Meriwether and Tharp doing a great service for people right now who find themselves in a tough situation. I hope that you'll check them out. By the way, we're going to have Jeff Sintel back on the show again today. We were supposed to do Mike Griffith. We had a little bit of a weird recording deal. Jeff was good enough to join us again today. I'm going to try to catch up with Mike tomorrow, and I appreciate, once again, your patience. We kind of try to figure a lot of that out in the new wake of what we find ourselves doing right now. We're not the only ones going through this. I saw where Stephen Colbert did his monologue for CBS show from his own house here recently, so we're kind of all dealing with a lot of new stuff on this. So thanks for your patience on all of that. And we'll get Jeff here coming up. Not a ton of recruiting with Jeff today. It's a little bit more of the kind of on-field speculation that we've kind of addressed over the show the last couple of days. Jeff's got some really interesting thoughts on that. He also kind of weighs in on the challenges that players and programs are going to be facing as they try to navigate this new normal for all of this. So I think it's really good stuff with Jeff Sintel. He had a lot of very interesting things to say, and we'll hear more of that from him coming up in just a moment. Also, while we're on the subject of the NFL here, I talked about Ben Watson's retirement, Thomas Davis' movement towards the Washington Redskins. Let me also mention there have been a couple rumors out there that Todd Gurley could be on the trading block. I want to say that Michael Silver from one of the NFL reporters said that Gurley could be traded from L.A. There have been, I think, Charles Robinson from Yahoo indicates that maybe Tampa could be one of the landing blocks there for him after acquiring Tom Brady. Maybe the Bucs are also looking to trade for Todd Gurley. So Gurley's had a great career in L.A., kind of fallen on some hard times a little bit because of the injury situation. Could be, you know, still trying to find a new NFL home and take advantage of the prime years that he has left. One way or another, Gurley's time playing for the Rams, high-profile team, big city, made a Super Bowl appearance a couple of years ago. That time in L.A. has no doubt benefited Georgia football. You know, Gurley became a little bit of a celebrity living out there, even though a lot of us from his time at Georgia remember him as a pretty shy guy all the way around. But it looks like, according to some reports that are out there, Gurley's time in L.A. could be done. So at a time in which most of the sports world's kind of ground to a halt, the NFL is making trades and signing free agents and getting ready for at least a version of the NFL draft. So they're stepping into the void to provide some football news, and right now a lot of that does include UGA. All right, we're going to get ready to say hello to Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily. Don't forget to check out the video version of our program on Facebook and YouTube. You can kind of look at me and see how the beard is growing in right now. I'm trying to do my quarantine beard, my social distance beard. You can check that out on both Facebook and YouTube. Of course, podcasts will be for you, here for you each and every day, including right now with our buddy Jeff Sintel. And I cannot say this enough. I mean this with all sincerity. Thank you so much for being here with us on Dog Nation Daily. We'll be here for each other during this time, and it is an honor to be able to speak to you about Georgia football. And I know that you join me in saying, can't wait to see this team back practicing and playing again. But for now, we'll do our part to keep you entertained, including Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Weird times here on Dog Nation Daily mean a chance to talk to Jeff Sintel. More than we have before. How about consecutive days? Mr. Sintel didn't have to be with us in the program. Technical difficulties prevented us from talking to Mike Griffith today. We're going to talk to him, but we're going to talk to Jeff instead. So, Jeff, we appreciate you being here. Obviously, as I said before, these are weird times, and I think that Dog Nation, just like everybody else, trying to make the best of the situation. And isn't that been kind of a nice thing to see, you know, in the midst of some weird news and in some cases disappointing news? You do see these hopeful stories of people banding together and neighborhoods trying to help each other out, communities trying to help each other out, communities supporting their local businesses. We see some examples of that, you know, we really do as a society try to find a way to pull together in the midst of all of this.
Yeah, it's funny, Brandon. Some of my peer group, we were talking yesterday about local businesses and restaurants we really like and appreciate, and we want to make sure we order food from them this week and next week, just to make sure that, you know, those are families with livelihoods that they got to make sure they got to eat too. So that's some of the things that are on our mind, right now. But, you know, Brandon, I guess with the beard, man, everybody wants to talk to you now. Suddenly you're a much more interesting person. That's why I'm on back-to-back podcasts, I guess.
Yeah, I'm a little bit like an Old Testament prophet at this point in time. You know, this thing keeps growing in. I'm going to be shouting down all kinds of proclamations there at that point. And I'll use the opportunity to have you here for a second day in a row to talk about some of the things that we have been discussing the last couple of days. I thought it was kind of an interesting thing on the show yesterday. And for the people who had a chance to hear the podcast, I hope they got this. You know, Ralph Russo, respected writer from the Associated Press, ranked Kirby Smart number 6 on his list of top 25 coaches in college football. And listen, there's nothing wrong with being number 6 on a list like that. There's nothing wrong with a guy like Russo expressing his opinion. We love that kind of stuff. No matter what the scenario in the offseason is, those lists give us something to debate. However, what I said on the show yesterday, Jeff, is that at 6, Kirby might be a little low for me. And to the extent that Russo, AP, kind of a August body of journalism, maybe a kind of stand-in for the rest of the national media, I think it speaks to a caricature that exists of Smart of, and this is a guy that's primarily a recruiter, and then his reputation as an on-field coach is down the line below that. And I tried to point out some examples yesterday of how maybe, you know, ultimately – that caricature of Smart may be too simplistic. That Smart's actually probably a better game coach than he's given credit for, especially on the side of the ball that he favors, which is the defensive side of the ball. You talked to a lot of recruits, Jeff. You know the impact that Kirby makes as a recruiter. Would you mind kind of isolating the other part of that? What do you think of Smart as a game coach?
Yeah, I think, you know, Brennan, from looking at the Russo list, I know you have it committed to memory. It just struck me as he put anybody with a title above him. Is that correct? Was that a qualifying criteria there?
Well, one of the weird names that did show up above him was Brian Kelly. Kirby was 6th on the list. Kelly from Notre Dame was 3rd. If you're looking to really, you know, distract yourself with some outrage right now, Kelly, who's lost head-to-head to Smart in 2 of the last 3 years, being ranked ahead of Smart on the list, that might be an opportunity for a little bit of outrage. If you were looking to entertain yourself with an argument, that's certainly one that you could make.
Well, certainly the only way you can do that is you could sit there and say that the only reason you can find a clear area, a clear gradient here where Brian Kelly is ahead of Kirby Smart might be the in-game management, might be the adjustments, the in-game strategy, the clock management, things of that nature. Everybody will point to examples. Even last year, South Carolina game pops up where, you know, Georgia's execution from the sideline can get a little cleaner. I think Kelly, when you look at what he's accomplished, though, You don't have major bowl wins. You don't have major wins against SEC opponents. You don't have, high rankings and holding on to those high rankings for a long time. It seems like you would be grading on the curve, especially because you're giving Kelly a lot of points for what he did at his earlier stops ahead of Notre Dame, just for being a veteran coach. And, you know, my take on all that is I think the areas where Brian Kelly, for example, it seems like that's a barometer to use among that top 10 guys who haven't won titles, is I think a lot of the mistakes or a lot of the things Kirby Smart has to learn, Brian Kelly did that as a young head coach at stops prior to the glamour job at Notre Dame. And I think maybe that experience, that seasoning is probably the only differences a sound person can ascertain between the two.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to look at Smart as an on-field coach, some of the things, especially if I'm looking to tout him in that regard, some of the things I'm going to bring up are, three-star prospects that go on to be first-round picks. DeAndre Baker's an example of that. J.R. Reed was a transfer from Tulsa, not typically a football hotbed, and yet he became a first-team AP All-American. Look at the way that Eric Stokes has grown over the course of his time at Georgia. And yes, I realize those are all defensive backs, and a head coach is going to do more than just be an expert at one position group. But if you look at the defense for a moment, the statistical performance the last couple of years, the player development that's gone on at that spot the last couple of years, I think that you clearly see an idea of the chess match that Kirby enjoys during a game. I think all of us are guilty of making heroes out of offensive geniuses, and sometimes we don't do the same thing for their defensive counterparts. But for every coach that we laud for being some sort of mad scientist of play calling, I have a hard time imagining that Kirby Smart is any less than that on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, the way I look at it, Brennan, is it's almost like a lot of those things, it's dependent on the position coach, and maybe that's on the coach for hiring a lot of teachers and people that will prep their players. I look at it as three ways. Like, A, if I'm hiring a head coach, it's A, who's going to help the money come in? Who's going to connect with the booster group? That's one. That engages everything else in your program. The second thing is who's more popular with recruits, who's more popular with the players, who's more fun to play for. I'm just gonna call all that stuff a likability or an accessibility issue right there. I think Kirby Smart, sets the curve for most of college football in a lot of those areas. The third thing is how well his guys, and meaning the players that exit his program, how well they're prepared to play in the NFL to chase down those dreams. And I think Georgia's doing a very good job of that on all three criterias right there. Now, are they winning the championship? No. But are you getting the program in the top four, in the top five, in that conversation where the only one that beats the Bulldogs is the eventual national champion? And you also have to score Kirby Smart high in that area as well.
A coach that showed up 20th on Russo's list was Auburn's Gus Malzahn. Now, what's interesting about that, Jeff, is I mentioned this yesterday, too, that there were a couple of other of these, best coach in America lists that have come out the last couple of days. Obviously, everybody's kind of looking to pass the time with kind of fun sports debates, and lists give us a chance to do that. But a couple of the other lists that came out recently didn't have Malzahn on it. And I always find myself in kind of a weird spot because I feel like I end up defending Malzahn and Auburn more than a Georgia fan such as myself would typically want to. But you can look at Malzahn a year ago and say that he beat Alabama in part because of a coaching decision late in the game. That, to me, is the only resume that you need in terms of what kind of coach you are. And the reason why I bring this up is because it's relevant for Georgia. Jeff, something else we've talked about this week is Foxbet put out some early point spreads for some of the 2020 games. And Georgia, 4.5-point underdog at Alabama, a 2-point favorite against Florida. Those are the games that all fans have circled. But I thought it was also interesting, Jeff, that Foxbet had Georgia hosting Auburn in October for the first time this upcoming season as just a 3.5-point favorite. That's not a very big spread, given the fact that Georgia's really had success against Auburn the last few years and the fact that Georgia's getting a chance to play the game in its own stadium. And to me, that's a reminder. For as much as someone like me highlights the Gator-Hater rivalry, and as much as Georgia fans are licking their chops about the opportunity to vanquish Alabama, in terms of big games that Georgia's going to play this season, Auburn's not going anywhere. Yes, Derrick Brown's not there anymore. Marlon Davidson's not there anymore. But I think Vegas or Foxbet, wherever it's located, I think they're trying to tell you that that Georgia-Auburn game is still really important, and Malzahn is just as much of a nemesis for Georgia still as a Mullen or really anybody else that Georgia plays every year, right?
Yeah, Brandon, that's going to look different to me. I always felt that – I mean, let's face it. You see Malzahn rated 20th, but then you have to take into account, I think the head-to-head record, is it even with Saban now? Is it 6-7? I mean, as a head coach, that he's really close to 500 with Saban. So that's definitely maybe the biggest thing for Malzahn. And I've always felt that, you know, if you're an Auburn person, this was an incredibly smart thing for Auburn to get away from that juggernaut back-to-back late of Georgia and Alabama. It always seemed that However Auburn fared against the Bulldogs, either galvanized or basically depleted them for the Alabama game. So now you move Auburn into that October slot. And I think it's pretty clear to see what's happening there is the SEC wanted to have SEC East elimination games in November to add some spice to everything down the stretch for TV ratings. Rather than an SEC West game, you know, traditions be darned when you've got the Deep South's oldest rivalry sticking in November to think about there. I think Malzahn, for all of the warts on his resume, he certainly got a couple of things right with that head-to-head with Alabama, those head-to-heads with Nick Saban, and how he's been able to consistently keep Auburn and keep his hot seat maybe defrosted or chilled out just a little bit with the Yeti. Year to year by winning some of those big battles with Saban. It's very interesting. You know, one more thing on that to me, I'd be curious to see where Ralph Russo placed James Franklin in the mix. Where is he at on the top 10 rankings?
Franklin's ahead of Smart as well. If memory serves, he's fifth, Smart is sixth. And, you know, I think that's another relative, I mean, not that I don't think that Franklin's a good coach, I think he probably is, but on the basis of accomplishments, I think that's a pretty thin resume to put yourself in the top five right now.
Yeah, that's definitely. I mean, I would argue that that's maybe even a little bit better than his resume is not even as good as Brian Kelly's, because at least Notre Dame, and maybe that's through the independent ties of Notre Dame and not having to go through the Big Ten like Penn State, they're at least getting in the conversation, the national conversation, a little bit more. But I think the national perception of both Kelly at Notre Dame and Franklin at Penn State is I don't think they're doing things that make them top five coaches in the country when the culture for both programs is a little bit underperforming.
But to go back to the Auburn thing here for a moment, don't you think it's a little bit weird that, I mean, you check out national media, and I know that I'm a, you know, Gator hater, and I love fanning the flames on the show. It's one of the things I really enjoy doing. It's fun for me. But just to try to be as objective as I can be for a moment, don't you think it's weird? And I know that Florida beat Auburn head-to-head this past year, but you can't stop seeing Florida hype. You can't stop seeing discussion of Florida as a fringe playoff contender, as a team that has a chance to topple Georgia in the SEC East. But if you're looking at program strength, is Florida as a program right now really that much stronger than Auburn, the regular season win a year ago, notwithstanding?
I don't think so. I mean, to me, I think Florida had, to me, and I guess Georgia was the same way in the 80s and 90s. I think college football in the SEC is better when Florida is a stout titan to be toppled. Much like the NFL. The NFL is not as good when the Bears aren't good, the Giants aren't good, the Eagles aren't good, the Redskins aren't good, the Cowboys aren't good. When those programs are not performing, when those franchises are not excelling and creating buzz and conversation, I don't think the overall product's the same. And I think that's the way about Florida. I think Florida's worth gets inflated a lot. And you talk about inflated preseason worth. Do you remember about 4 or 5 years ago, everything with Auburn, how every quarterback they were rolling out, I'm thinking about Jeremy Johnson, was a Heisman contender, and Auburn was Auburn was the national champion, you know, dark horse contender, or that Vogue pick for everyone during the dog days of summer. I mean, you just see Auburn there. That's somebody that people want to galvanize and to put up there on a pedestal to just drum up more excitement in college football. Because I know it's great for your program, but it's not good when Georgia has clinched the SEC East basically before they even get to Florida and Jacksonville. It's not good for the product. It's just not good for the picture that everyone's trying to sell. And I think I think that's where that comes from with Florida. And I think if Georgia, if the roles were reversed, you would see a lot more people kind of trying to trot out Georgia the same way they're doing now with Florida.
Let me squeeze in one final question before we let you go, and this is a more serious topic, but the more I kind of pay attention to what I think is going on right now, and the more we come to grips with the fact that it's going to be a while before we get back to the business of college football as we know it, I think the big story, Jeff, is going to be for players individually. And I talked to John Sinchcomb about this on Monday. He had some good things to say, but the big story is going to be, how do you handle your body during this time? You know, are you finding a way to get some good nutrition? Are you finding a way to get some kind of workout in with gyms closing all over the place? This obviously is bigger than football. It's a real life scenario, but we talk about football on the show. And I think that offenses and game plans and things like that can be installed relatively quickly. I think that if players lose control of their physical discipline individually, it's going to hurt them in the upcoming season. I don't just mean Georgia players. I mean college football players across the board. Individually, how guys take the personal responsibility to handle this time away from the accountability of their football programs. Jeff, I just think that's the biggest part of this story. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's that way at all levels. Because, Brandon, think about just maybe 20 years ago. Like strength trainers, coaches, they didn't know what these players' bodies looked like every day, every week. They weren't getting the daily hands-on attention where someone would come back from a vacation or someone would come back from a period and they'd go, wow, Joe Doe or John Dean, man, he really took care of himself in the offseason. I can tell he's getting serious. He looks to me in great shape, and that's somewhat of a revelation. That doesn't happen anymore. Everybody's so meticulous. Everybody works out these guys. I mean, they're getting – you saw Scott Sinclair yesterday tweeting out workout plans that everybody can do from home, and you got guys rehabbing an injury, Brandon. That's crucial right now. You got guys that maybe needed to get bigger, faster, stronger, put on 10 pounds of armor to go into a more prominent role. I think of all those redshirt freshman defensive linemen at Georgia. Those are things that are going to be very interesting right there about how many self-starters are in your program that are going to come in just as good a shape. But, Brent, I got two or three more things for you that are really, really, really on my mind right now about this. And it's kind of like, how are these players, like for a great example, Trey McKitty, that's somebody that always – a lot of people have already penciled into the starting lineup at Georgia for the Virginia game. How can he graduate from Florida State? Is that in any way slowed because he's not taking classes? Does he need to do those online? What does that mean for Trey McKitty? What does that mean for high school players that maybe were on the bubble and needed some – let's face it, George Pickens was doing this a year ago. George Pickens needed to get right in the classroom and stay right in the classroom in order to graduate. What about players that simply needed to finish up their stuff to become a graduate transfer or just move on from another program? Guys that needed to handle their business to get into the portal. I mean, these are guys that maybe are those guys on the roster that they know they won't be back next season, but they're still finishing out the spring semester. What if that gets a little murky? What if that gets a little wonky? What about the guy recovering from a shoulder injury? What about a guy that needed to clean out a shoulder? Those are things to me. I mean, obviously we've got to stay on page because this is a football, a university athletic program podcast. Certainly there are much bigger things in this society to think about. But you wonder about all those little things where the infrastructure's not there. And you wonder, how is that still going to happen smoothly for everybody to show up if a school needs to have, you know, three less players on scholarship so three new players can come in? I wonder about all those things, not to mention all the stuff that's happening on the high school level with recruiting.
No, I think it's absolutely fair, Jeff. I think we're looking at a scenario where the deeper we get into this, there are going to be a lot more questions asked, like the one you asked in regards to grad transfers. I think it's a very good question. And unfortunately, the list of questions that we have is going to grow far before we ever get any answers to any of these things. I mean, you know, you and I are close to the same age. I would say certainly my lifetime, nothing has ever been weirder than this for sports and beyond. And I'm guessing people who are much older than us probably said the same thing, that, I mean, do you have to go back to World War II to find a time in which society was as upended as it is right now? And we don't know yet how long it's going to be. Hopefully it's not going to be nearly as long as a war footing was back in the 1940s. But I mean, I'm straining my imagination to find a time in which society was just more ground to a halt than it kind of has been with what's going on here, and just the logistical nightmare that it's going to create for college sports once things are kind of all put back together again.
Yeah, you know, Brent, I got one more that was on my thought bubble that I'd even mention during that last moment was, Brandon, what about the not the early enrollees, they're there, but what about the guys that were supposed to report in, for the Maymester, you know, late May, early June? Well, where do they go? They can't come to the campus unless there's a green light left for the University of Georgia for them to come in. And what about those storylines about how can Georgia, if he's ready, get Broderick Jones ready or Tate Ratledge ready or Jalen Carter ready? What about the freshman receivers like Arian Smith and Jermaine Burton? Those guys that look like, in an ideal world, they were going to come in ready to work and ready to be ready if Todd Monken called on them. I think all those things are on hold, where if you got guys that maybe if they don't even show up in Athens to be a part and plug into the program until late June, early July instead of late May, Brandon, that whole month is crucial for the acclimation of the college experience, the putting the weight on, the sports nutrition and everything else like that. I'd imagine in game, Brandon, you might almost look at college football as a whole, crossing our fingers, hoping we get college football as a whole this fall, that it's going to look different. Maybe it won't be as clean. Maybe the schemes will be a little simpler, or maybe a lot of those young guys just aren't going to be ready to go.
Jeff, it's good stuff. We hope to have positive answers to these questions coming up really soon. I know you've got a lot of great stuff coming up at DogNation.com, so we'll let you get to work on that. And thanks for making another appearance here on Dog Nation Daily today, and we'll look forward to getting a chance to speak to you again soon.
All right, Brandon. Looking for your first beard oil sponsor to show up really soon, man. Good luck with that.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff there from Jeff Sintel. Really appreciate him being a part of our program for second day. You know, there are certain voices that just kind of, I guess, make you feel okay about the world, make you feel at peace. And when Jeff and I are talking college football, that's an example of that for me. It sort of seems like real life and our normal life, even though we're in the midst of something that feels very, very different than that right now. By the way, with that in mind, I also want to give a shout out to my friends at Kroger here for a moment. First of all, I'll let you know about Kroger's decided the best way to serve you in the time to come here is to open stores at 8 a.m. That's going to give them more time to get the shelves stocked, more time to keep the store as clean as you obviously want it to be. Peace of mind for you added because of that. So Kroger hours for the next little bit here are going to be 8 a.m. open, 9 p.m. closed. Now, fuel center is going to be 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., so you can stop by and get some fuel when you need to. But the store hours for the foreseeable future, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. on that from our friends at Kroger. And, you know, I live in the Atlanta area, and I was at one of the Krogers on Saturday, I guess it was, in Alpharetta, and I just couldn't believe how nice and accommodating and friendly everyone was. I was so grateful for that. And, you know, they're doing a great job keeping the shelves stocked. One thing, I mean, I've talked to some of the people, or at least I've talked to people who've talked to people, some of my friends at Kroger, kind of through an intermediary, and, you know, they have, you know, lots of confidence that the shelves are going to keep being restocked and stuff's going to keep being added in there. I know there's a little bit of a panic and concern about that, but, you know, the supply chains are open. Trucks are still delivering. Stores are still going to be open. So I know that it can be easy to want to be feel very concerned about that, but the indication that we're getting is that everything's going to continue to be fine, and Kroger's going to continue to do what it has done for a long time, which is work really hard to serve you. And I think these hours of operation right now are going to make it even easier and even better to do that. So huge thanks to our friends at Kroger for making all this possible. Personal thanks from me for the individual service. And they didn't know who I was. They didn't know I was Dog Nation Daily. They just were being nice because that's what they do. So huge thanks at Kroger for making all that possible. All right, SEC Through here for a moment. And I saw this. I thought this was fun. A lot of people are kind of putting out some content right now to just sort of give us something to debate, argue about, and kind of pass the time. And there's a guy named Jeff Sagarin. Do you know who that is? Now, we're kind of in the analytics era now where ESPN employs a lot of, you know, statistically minded guys and things like that. But Sagarin was really among the first. Going back to the BCS formula, that Sagarin computer rating was a part of that. And he's crunched his numbers, and I got this from the Spun, a website, but Sagarin has crunched his numbers to give us the top 10 teams dating back to the year 2000. Now, I'll give you all 10 of these, and then we'll talk here for a moment. Number 10 on the list, Florida State from 2013. Number 9, Clemson from 2018. Number 8, USC from 2004. Seventh best team since 2000, according to Jeff Sagarin, is Alabama from 2011. Number 6 and number 5, both teams from last year. LSU and Ohio State, respectively, 5 and 6 on the list from Jeff Sagarin, both those from the most recent season. Number 3 and number 4, the two teams that played for the 2016 National Championship, Clemson and Alabama. Then finally, the number 2 team on the list for Jeff Sagarin of best teams since 2000, according to his ratings formula, was Miami in 2001, and Texas in 2005 comes in at number 1 on this list. There are a few things that jump out to me on the basis of this kind of right away. We have been in such an SEC level of domination for quite some time. I know I'm kind of an SEC homer. You'd expect me to say that, but the numbers really speak for themselves. You know, starting in, 2006, we had a run of SEC national champions all the way until 2013, right? And then, had a couple year absence, and then, SEC teams have done very well for themselves in the college football playoff era. You know, SEC teams have won the lion's share of national championships in recent years. But it wasn't that long ago, just a couple decades ago, where that just wasn't really true. You know, the top two teams on this list, both non-SEC teams, Texas in 05, Miami in 01, really the top three teams are non-SEC teams, if you count Clemson in 2016. So, it's important to know that this run of SEC dominance that we've seen at the national championship level is really only about a couple of decades old. You know, prior to that, there were some all-time great teams kind of coming from outside the SEC. And back then, it was the league trying to work its way into the national championship conversation. A lot of you will remember Auburn in 2004 as an example of this. The team that did not get the benefit of the doubt to play against USC, which, by the way, did come in at number 8 on this list of the top teams since the year 2000, but it was Oklahoma at the time who got the nod over Auburn after LSU had won the previous year's, at least a share of the national championship in 2003. So that was back when the SEC didn't quite have the reputation that it has now. But starting with Florida in 06 and LSU in 07, and then the beginning of the Nick Saban era after that, all of a sudden the SEC established a run of dominance that's really given itself the benefit of the doubt ever since then. But that wasn't necessarily the case in the early 2000s. So pretty interesting stuff from Jeff Sagarin, looking at his formula, the top teams going back to the year 2000, and interesting to see. Well, once again, the SEC representation on the list, Alabama from 2016, LSU from 2019, and then Alabama again from 2011. Those are the SEC teams on the list. We'll make that your SEC through. And with that, we'll get ready to wrap up this edition of Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, we appreciate all of you being with us. And we'll keep delivering the show for you in the format, at least as close as we can make it to the that you've grown accustomed to. And for all of you who are in the midst of a very busy time, I know working from home can be a real challenge. You know, just a different kind of formula. It's weird. Working from home is one of those things that sounds really good. When you start trying to do it, assuming you're doing some real work, it can just feel a little bit different. So for those of you who are doing that with us right now, we certainly appreciate all of that. I'll remind you, Gator Hater Updater, 1,236 days. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.